This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, let's get into some news. It is 7 o'clock, CliffCentral.com. Good morning. What's happening, Mubs? What do we need to know?
Well, you know how most of us are forced to wake up very, very early in the morning, and then others, you know, they'll claim to be night owls and all that stuff.
Right.
Well, apparently, this isn't new and this isn't surprising. It's very bad for us to be living that kind of lifestyle. In fact, night owls risk dying younger, according to a new sleep study.
No.
Oh,
that's
yes.
That's good news for us, though, huh?
Well, we wake up early, but we don't go to sleep early. I don't. I try. It doesn't always happen. Last night, I said, I'm going to be in bed by 10.
Mm-hmm. And?
Eventually, I think you got to sleep at 12:15.
Okay, well, that's a problem.
I know.
Yeah, you're dying first.
So people who stay up late and have to drag themselves out of bed are likelier to die younger than those who rise and sit with the sun. This is
from... Do you have to go to sleep when the sun goes down? Is that what they say?
No, I think that's just like a nice saying.
Imagine you do that for a whole year. You actually sleep with the sun.
Wow. I think you'd probably recharge like a battery, huh?
Weird.
Imagine.
Yeah, that week when I took off and I was waking up with... Like, I was actually waking up by myself. I wasn't relying on an alarm clock. I felt human again.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
So this survey has looked at more than 430,000 people in Britain over the last 6.5 years. And it has found that night owls had a 10% higher risk of dying.
Huh.
They're saying that it is a public health issue that can no longer be ignored. I mean, how often do we read and hear about the importance of sleep?
Well, yeah, and it's just one of those things that we make negotiable. Like, I've got so much to do, I think I just won't sleep. Bad move.
Yeah. So, night owls trying to live in a morning lock world may suffer serious health consequences, on the extreme side being death.
Oh my God. Doesn't get much more extreme than that.
Yeah. That gets your attention, huh? It's like, just a little bit
sure.
of death.
So you're gonna die. All right.
Yeah. They also took other things into consideration because you have to, you know, things like their weight, how healthy they were being,
yeah,
what they were eating, smoking habits, socioeconomic status, all that stuff they took into consideration. But yeah, the study has suggested that just that difference of not getting enough sleep plays a huge factor in your overall health and how long you get to remain on the earth.
Well, in that case, I'm cheers, everybody. I'm going to go home and sleep.
Okay, all right, yeah.
And you know, everybody's got these ideas. Like, you hear these jumped up suddenly, you have no qualification in medicine. They say to you, oh no, but all you need to do is have a 20-minute nap and you'll recharge. That's obviously nonsense, right? You're going to sleep solidly.
Yeah, because you need to basically reset, and your body essentially works in systems. So you have sleep cycles. And 20 minutes is just basically wasting 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You're just going to wake up tired. You'll have like short-term gain of like not feeling tired for 20 minutes. But that's worse.
Well, Yoweri Museveni, you know who he is. He's the president of Uganda. He's been president since 1986. So,
that's a good run.
Yeah.
Good run.
You think maybe it's time for him to move on, but he doesn't think so.
Nope.
So he has some advice for you if you are Ugandan about sex. You wouldn't have thought it, but here he is. You're wary Museveni telling you what he thinks you need to know about sex.
Let me take this opportunity to warn our people publicly about the wrong practices indulged in and promoted by some of the outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is what they call oral sex. The mouth is for eating. Okuria. Okuria. Charm. The mouth is for eating, not for sex. We know the address of sex.
So there he is. Just in case you were having a really good session with your loved one last night.
Yoweri
Museveni says that the mouth is for eating.
I love it.
Isn't that great? This guy's the president of fucking Uganda.
We know the address for sex. Wow.
Now, if he were wandering around with a with a placard in a public area screaming and shouting, we would ignore him. We'd say, oh, there's a crazy person. His poor wife.
Oh,
imagine. So I looked her up just to see what, you know, whether she's a happy person or not. I couldn't get any information about that. They got married in 1973.
No, what?
Yeah, Janet Museveni. She kind of looks a little bit manly, if you ask me.
Uh-oh.
I'm just saying.
Ooh.
You know, not a very feminine-looking woman, this, Janet Museveni.
45 years together.
Yeah, they've been around a long time, these two. Janet K. Museveni. And she's on Twitter, so you can go and see for yourself. But this is the wife of Yoweri Museveni. And, okay, she's not all manly. It was maybe just the picture I saw, the first one. But she's got a tough life, this poor woman. Because oral sex is bad. These are wrong practices.
The mouth is for eating.
Yeah. We know the address of sex.
I do love it when people from an entirely different generation want to, you know, want all of us to follow their rules.
Mm.
It's the best.
Can the president stick to running the country and he says, signing laws into power?
Says, these are wrong practices. Like, he's the boss of what people should and shouldn't do. I just love it.
Between their sheets.
So I thought I'd let you know what he had to say about that. Very exciting stuff. And while we're talking about exciting stuff, let us not forget what happened once on, what was that show, that Espresso, Morning Espresso, mm-hmm. or whatever it's called? The reason that Beyonce will never come to South Africa again.
Oh, guys.
You know what I'm talking about, no. right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Let me play it for you. Let me just play this for you quickly. This was when... Was it Jamali? Who was it?
Oh, no. Those are parody girls. No, please don't care.
I know.
Yes.
They're called Woman to Woman.
Jamali.
Turalef. Everything you own in a box. Turalef. In the closet. That's my stuff. Yes. If I bought it. Say, don't touch.
Don't touch. Keep telling that mess. That's fine. Could you walk and talk at the same time? And it is my name that is on that mess. So remove your bag so I can call you a cab. I'm standing in the yard. See, and he's telling me how I'm such a fool. He's talking about I will never ever find a bra like him. Yo, I got lekker op zijn kop gevallen. You must not know about me. You must not know about me.
Oh, oh yes.
Okay, right.
So Beyonce did hear it, that she was in Coachella and she heard that and she decided to set herself on fire.
Just as she was about to come, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because, right. you know.
She was about to sign that next day.
Of course she was. Of course she was. No, we just have to stick to live streaming her
now. That was on Espresso. Oh, yeah, yeah. Someone recorded it and sent it to me ages ago. I just never got around to it. Yeah. What's that, Ben?
It's a progressive show.
It's a very progressive show. But there we go, everybody. Isn't that exciting?
We love them.
Mm-hmm.
You know how people say that be careful what information you let onto the internet because it's likely to stay there forever?
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a UK judge has ordered Google to remove old articles about a businessman's past crime from its search results, dealing a blow to the tech company in its legal battle over Europe's right to be forgotten law. This is something that they're busy contesting in that part of the world. It actually involves two businessmen, both unnamed in this case. They went to court to force Google to delist several articles about years-old crimes, arguing in part that the stories were out of date, they were of no public interest, and they infringe on their privacy rights. So how do we feel about that? How do we feel about the fact that...
these are wrong practices.
That's the term of the day.
No, I think this is very important. Come on. I mean, let's be serious for a second here. If you do something wrong or someone puts something up about you, and anyone can put anything up about anyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
You should have the right to have that taken down, and you should also have the right for it to be wiped out. If you are trying to make a living, let's say in your youth you stole a feather duster from the shops. And they decided to arrest you for stealing the feather duster. And then you were branded a thief.
Mm.
And then later on in life, you haven't committed any crime since the feather duster. You didn't go to jail. You had to pay a fine or whatever. But it says thief there. You should have that wiped out after 15 years. You're not a thief forever.
So Google had previously declined their request to delete the stories about them, in one case citing the substantial public interest of providing information about the individual's professional life. This was their argument. But then Justice Mark Warby ruled in favor of one of the businessmen, determining that the information about the crime and punishment had become outdated and irrelevant, and as such, Google are now being forced to delete certain information about these guys.
I'm sorry, just go onto Google. Speaking of Google, just go onto Google. Just Google image Janet Museveni and just look at her image. Just the first picture that comes up.
Look, she's a woman who has lived. Let's start there. Secondly, I see how this photo shoot in particular with the gold blouse and the gold massive
and she's wearing
earrings,
a string of pearls. It's not great.
Yes, I get how this picture could have been used as a great campaign shot. So,
the first picture that comes up if you look up Janet Museveni.
So, I mean, you, for example, in this instance, if you are not happy with that image, you are well within your rights to say, take it down!
I see nothing wrong with that. That's a great smoldering eye. She's looking at you seductively.
Yeah, she's great.
Oh, no!
The other pictures just
oh,
get
wow.
better.
That's...
Guys, be kind. How old is that lady? She's just know. A middle-aged woman.
I don't think she's as old as her husband. Not by a long way.
Oh, but that's
he's
at
in
least
his,
a 50,
he's
right?
in his mid-70s. She is... 68. Okay, so she's.
Oh yeah, that's good for 68.
Janet Kataha, I kid you not, Janet Kataha Museveni.
She was born in 1949.
Yeah.
Why does that seem so? Oh yeah, 69. No, she's fine. She's
they got
fine.
Four kids together.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows the address of sex.
I found a slightly older picture of her.
Oh yeah. Oh, Jesse
no,
Jackson.
No,
hey, did anybody see the King of All Blacks, Jesse Jackson, over the weekend?
Well, no, I mean, you know, you've got to be quite high profile to roll in that circle.
I'm kind of disappointed with these people. We were in conversations.
Oh, really?
Because he was coming into
and
the country.
And I just gone back to America.
I mean,
of course he has, because he came here for his moment so he could be on the stage, and now he's gone. He just needed to polish up his black credentials.
I prefer my Al Sharpton. As opposed to yeah. Jesse Jackson.
Well, he's trying. I mean,
Sharpton
Al, did you hear Al Sharpton and Joe Biden might run together
what?
In oh. the next election? I mean, can you imagine?
I think they should do it purely for entertainment reasons.
But those two are very entertaining. I would be entertained.
Al Sharpton just needs to stick to his new diet, whatever he's doing, not run.
Well, anyway. Now listen, if anybody bumped into Jesse Jackson, Jesse Jackson somewhere, shop store or something... Then just tell us if he would tell us what he bought.
Look, I would vote, by the way, for this whole Google thing to get things off the internet. I would vote for that.
But didn't Beyonce do that like a few years ago? She had this horrible photo at the Super Bowl that someone took. It looked like she literally had smelt something really bad.
There we go.
And yeah. eventually yeah? her team got it taken away.
Yeah. Oh. Because you know when you're in a performance and you're very expressive and you're about to like do a little turn and twist and then you pull a certain face. Yeah.
Beyonce's yes, I like, remember
nope,
that picture.
And that's not going to happen
that's
at all.
That's the picture, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Why is that still there?
People then screenshot it and put it back up.
I just found that picture, so.
As the head of the Beyonce Giselle Knowles Carter Club, I will email Google again.
Well, it says here, it's been 4 years since Beyonce's publicist tried to remove this unflattering photo from the internet. But there it is. It's still there.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you can't. You can't delete something from the internet because someone's got a picture of it. They'll put it back up.
And a screenshot and a whatnot. Yeah.
There's some very unflattering pictures of her. And if Beyonce looks bad, you imagine how fucking ugly you look.
Do you know?
Yeah, look. Yeah. I mean, that's an entirely different league
yeah, sure.
altogether.
But also, there's a picture of when Fergie or the Black Eyed Peas, and she literally pissed her pants because she didn't have time to go to the ladies. She's
Oh, yeah?
The annoying thing is Beyonce's ugly is what I even hope for.
Oh, my God. There's a picture of Fergie with a...
when she pissed her pants.
Oh, yeah. My God. That is horrendous. Oh, that's terrible. Look at that.
Well, to really think about it, when you are performing on stage, you can't be in the middle of My Humps, My Lovely Lady Lumps and go, sorry, guys, I need to go and pee.
I'm sorry. You know, before you pack the kids into the car for the long-distance road trip, you kind of look at them and you say, do any of you idiots need the loo? Because now is the time. Yeah. You're trying to tell me Fergie didn't feel like she needed the bathroom before going on stage? How does that happen?
No, you're right, Mubs. It's called professionalism. And I'm not just saying, like, learn the words of your song. Like, do not piss your pants also goes under professionalism.
Come on.
Not that I'm judging her, of course.
Just, you know, before you went in to watch Black Panther, Sia, didn't you, like, just stand there for a second and think, I wonder if I should start at the bathroom first?
I don't know. I think Fergie pissing her pants is way worse than Beyonce pulling an ugly face.
Oh, absolutely.
Jesus, and she was wearing some really unflattering shorts. And who gave her that idea for an outfit on stage? You always wear black on stage, just in case.
Come on, that was like at least 2007, 2006. We were all doing bad things.
No, but you also realized that Fergie was like the sporty spice of the new kind of millennium.
Mm.
So she had to dress like that.
I remember I used to take style tips from Avril Lavigne. That was a bad time in my life when she used to wear ties and t-shirts.
Have you got some of those pictures?
I wish they were deleted off Google.
She has spent his last savings on Google deleting those pictures. Well, but what happens is Beyonce's team go, say, right, here's $10 million. This picture doesn't exist. And then Google goes, okay, welcome to our black division. You know, like you get the different cards, you get platinum, silver,
platinum,
whatever.
Gold, yeah.
But when you're in the black division, like American Express black card, if you're a Google black member?
I don't think you can get rid of anything completely because it does go onto the dark web and people will resurface it. And, you know, basically if you've done something stupid and there's photographic evidence of it, it's there forever. Just, you're going to have to get on with it. And as for what Mabali is saying about the information, well, Google could make it harder by not making it show up in the search results. That's what they've really got to be able to do. The right to be forgotten.
Yeah, the right to be forgotten law in Europe. So Europe are really putting pressure on Google, trying to say, actually, we want to get to a point where we get to dictate to you what I want up there on your platform.
Right. Like I would like to be forgotten in a really lovely picture of me with David Beckham. Like I would like me not to be in the picture because next to him I look much, much worse as a human being. So David Beckham's a lot of things. He's a world-famous footballer, a father, a style icon. He's the guy who made tattoos mainstream. He's also refined and cool like his own whiskey, which is called Haig Clubman. It's about changing the game, breaking the rules, and doing things differently. Someone actually sent me a picture over the weekend of them with a bottle of Haig Clubman. They went and bought some because they heard about it here on our show. Nice. And it is unconventional. We had an unconventional, unradio conversation with David Beckham about his new whiskey and his family, being an entrepreneur, breaking the rules. You can download the podcast now. It's all at cliffcentral.com. Haig Clubman, not for salespersons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. What else is going on?
Entrepreneur and billionaire Quentin Funderburg has set his sights on two new business ventures, two of the Gupta Mines, which he says he plans to have financially stable in the next 2 months. And then he says that the ultimate goal is to increase coal production within 6 months.
Yeah.
Funderburg has won a temporary contract to keep Optimum and Grootfontein mines afloat.
All right.
They are two of the crippled Gupta mines. Through his business, Berg Group Holdings, the businessman will act as a technical advisor to the mines.
Okay.
And various Gupta businesses are, of course, struggling because banks shun them from following allegations of, you know, the kind of dealings that they've had with certain members of the country. Optimum Coal and six other companies were placed in administration in February and were unable to operate because India's Bank of Baroda was preparing to leave the country. So other parties offered financing. And Quentin Funderburg, you know, is one of those who has been granted a temporary contract to try and turn the businesses around. So
fantastic.
That's where he set his next goals.
All right. Well, good for him. And we need someone to step in there. You know, you imagine all the jobs that have gone, all that natural resource that we could be using. I mean, obviously, the guy's got to make a profit as well. So he wants to run it as a business. But how else do you pay people? So let's get cracking here, Quentin Funderburg. Come on, let's do this. I like it. By the way, while we're talking about Beyonce, I see she's trending all over the place with Baychella.
Mm.
So Coachella's Baychella.
Yeah, she... We'll see. I will definitely be more qualified to talk about this. How long was she on stage for?
A good 2 hours.
Good 2 hours. She
and
is
the...
Did
need a toilet?
No, she did not because she's a consummate professional.
Well, we've learned today at the very least that Beyonce trumps Fergie.
Yeah, it was an awesome performance. Jay-Z made a cameo on stage. She had this massive marching band, probably I'll say easily 60 people on there and dancers as well. And then there was a Destiny's Child reunion.
Oh, nice.
You've always got to bring...
Where did she find Michelle?
Michelle.
Oh, poor Michelle.
You know...
And really, Beyonce, of course, looks so fantastic. Kelly came on with the skimpy little outfit, also
Kelly
looking fantastic. Nice. Michelle,
shame.
This ill-fitting long bunt. Just
you guys are harsh. You love being mean about Michelle.
Poor Michelle. And then she also brought in her sister Solange for like quite a cute sister.
Ben's a big fan of Solange. He says Solange is better than Bey.
Listen, I... got into a lot of trouble for liking Solange's most recent album over her sister's not too long ago. People said I didn't know what I was talking about.
That's
the
problem with cult members, though. They're irrational.
That's fine. Yeah. The Beehive have their own rules that are set.
I'm just looking at a little video of Beyonce and Kelly and Michelle. Boy, Michelle doesn't look too bad.
Oh, poor Michelle.
No, she doesn't look too bad. Come on.
And then,
I'm the first to climb onto criticizing her. But she doesn't look too terrible. And you know what? I love Destiny's Child. When they were I thought they were fantastic.
Mm, they were huge. Huge.
Huge.
Michelle is always half a second offbeat. Just things
shut up.
Don't
what do
go
you know?
Away.
You think that you're Beyonce's friend.
No.
Yes, you do.
Soul sister.
Yeah.
She and I are soul sisters.
You know she doesn't know you exist.
Yo. Listen, she thanked me in that performance.
Sure.
She said, and all of you watching at home, thank you. And I said, bae,
by the way,
talking to
everyone else who's a massive Beyonce fan who is part of the cult, they will say the same.
I saw a tweet that I quite liked. It was a guy and he said, oh, so this is what it feels like for women every time we, like, football tweets end up in their timeline. And he said, okay, ladies, sorry, I get it now.
Yeah.
I get it.
Like, it was just annoying to hear everyone. Okay.
At first we started out real cool. Taking me places
I used to love these girls. I thought they were magic. They really were.
The club is full of ballers and their pockets full grown. And now you fellas leave your girl with her friends. Cause it's 11:30 and the club is jumping.
Jumping. Oh, what a great song.
Yeah,
this, of course.
Oh, is that a compilation?
We're doing a little retrospective.
This little Stevie Nicks inspired beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Just by the way,
sexy, looking fly.
I know Beyonce's like all of us, older now. She was super thin in those Destiny's Child days.
Yeah.
I thought her body was smoking then. To me, this whole thick look is not my thing. I know it's some people's thing, and I know she's a little bit older, and it's probably more appropriate.
No, she's 36.
Wow, looking at that body in these music videos from the 90s, Jesus.
Mm. But I mean,
she was fine.
She gets huge credit also for having that moment where pop culture changed the way that they viewed the thicker girl.
Mm.
I mean, she gets basically all the credit for that whole curvaceous movement and that.
She put bootylicious in the dictionary.
It's not my thing. I mean, if you look, do yourself a favor, go and have a look at the bootylicious music video.
Yeah.
She does not have that big, thick, you know, those chunky thighs that she's got now. She was magnificent by my, you know, estimation. Then that was more the kind of Beyonce look I like. But then I can understand why there's a lot of people who like the way she looks now.
Ooh.
I get it.
That mother of three, that. You know, I actually...
What are they called, the kids?
There's Blue Ivy, and then there's Sir and Rumi Carter.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Almost as wacky a set of names as the... the Brad Pitt Angelina clan, and then
Pax Maddox, Shiloh, Vivian Knox, Zahara.
Zahara. Get it right.
Yeah. But you know, in that.
And who's the other one who's got those weird kids' names?
Apple.
Zuma.
Apple and Zuma.
Well, Apple is Gwyneth Paltrow. Zuma is Gwen Stefani's kids. Yeah.
No, I mean, in that circle, in that part of the world, like, your child has to have a weird name.
These poor kids are all going to grow up.
T's and C's apply.
They're all going to grow up going, you know, my parents gave me such a dumbass name. Yeah, but that's because your parents gave you such a dumb name. Yeah. If our parents weren't in Hollywood, we would have had normal names like Jeff.
Mm. And not Rocket.
Yeah, or Tom. How about that? What's wrong with that? Mm-mm. Rocket.
That's also another Gwen Stefani kid.
Jeez.
Oh, is it? Is it an actual...
Rocket. Yeah, it is.
Rocket and Zuma. Unbelievable.
You know, I actually grew up hating Beyonce.
What?
I know.
This is outrageous.
This is a revelation of the day.
How did that happen? What changed?
Because I have three older sisters.
Yeah, and they used to love her.
And they were always, we used to reenact music videos, and they were always Destiny's Child.
And you were
And I was the backup dancer. So I used to hate it. And then I saw the light now.
There's no chance you could have ended up straight, huh?
No.
You never had a chance.
There was no way, Sia. Like, you might have... who's
tried
to say?
As I might.
Mean, we love you the way you are, and that's terrific. But there was no hope in hell. If you had liked, if you had liked women, that would your sisters would have stamped that out.
The fact that I knew all the choreography at like age six, you couldn't tell me anything.
Let's
about
carry on with
delicious.
Our let's carry on with our Destiny's Child retrospective, shall we? Okay. Having some fun with this, actually. I really like these girls so. This is a live performance. And again, Beyonce just looks, to my eyes, like perfect at that stage. Jesus. Mm.
Now, how many Destiny's Children have there been, Sia? This is also like...
Yeah, what happened there?
I think like five or six.
Yeah, because, you know, people kept being replaced. Others would leave because... Daddy Knowles.
Yeah. And Beyonce was always getting the first verse naturally. And they were like, I'm not going to stand for this, so goodbye.
And I'm pretty sure there were legal battles at some point as well. So they, you know, they've also been through their own ups and downs.
Matthew Knowles is like the late 90s Joe Jackson.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Absolutely he was. Yeah, he wanted the best for his little girls. And he did with one of them. He certainly succeeded in making her a superstar. The other one, yeah, maybe. Survivor. Yo, she looked good. All right, enough. I'm getting distracted by this. I can't even concentrate.
This is a good way to start the week. Let's do this every week,
I like
guys.
Anyway, look, she's all over the news today because she's the highlight of Coachella. Mm. The other thing that happened at Coachella was that little kid who does the Walmart yodeling.
Oh, what is this trend?
You don't know about this?
I don't know what.
Do I know about something that? Something millennial that you
no,
don't?
I do know about it, but I just don't get why this kid is... Like, why everyone thinks he's so awesome.
Right, well, I'll tell you. Because
just yodels.
I don't think he's awesome.
Annoyingly so.
But he went on stage at Coachella, and he even took a picture with Justin Bieber. Ugh. And the funniest thing about that is that someone posted it and said, look, this is the second time he's met Ellen in 1 week. Because have you seen what Bieber looks like?
Oh, no, look what sad. Does he look like? No.
Oh, it's horrendous.
Oh, but
no, you have to see it to believe it.
Looks like a bit hobo-ish, right, and not in a cute tipster.
So here's the original video. Now I have to be honest. I do not understand yodeling. I think it's ridiculous. If I'm sure that there's a talent there, I'm sure, but you know, I don't know what it is. To me, it's so embarrassing.
Why? Why is it embarrassing?
Listen to it. It's just ridiculous. It sounds like someone who's lost their mind and they're screeching and hollering from the top of a mountain.
One day she said goodbye. Well, Lord, I thought I would cry. She do me, she do you. She's got that kind of loving. Lord, I love to hear when she comes to sleep. That is such a beast.
So pleasant in the ear.
Yeah, it's just awful. It's really... Anyway, this kid's a superstar now, and he was at Coachella, and he was performing, and everybody was loving him.
Oh, okay.
Because he's the flavor of he's the internet sensation of the moment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of funny that Bieber was in the crowd when they filmed him on stage, because I saw a video of him on stage and Bieber standing there, and they kind of look at the stage and they look at Bieber, because he was the first major internet sensation in some ways.
Yeah, he was busking, basically.
That's what he did. He was the yodeling kid in Walmart once. So actually, it's like it's come full circle. Now he's standing watching some other kid who's an internet sensation. Hmm. It's quite something, though. And apparently they loved him at Walmart. So there we go. All right, anything else you want to throw in?
Well, I don't know if you guys heard about the story. It actually happened late last week where an actor who was rehearsing a fight on a movie set in the Drakensberg plunged to his death.
Oh my God, what happened?
After falling 40 meters into a river and then was washed over a waterfall. It happened on Thursday, but his body was only recovered on the Friday morning. So it's understood that the 39-year-old man from Centurion had fallen from a cliff at Sterkspruit Waterfall in the southern Drakensberg. At the time, well, I actually still can't find his name, but he hadn't been named because his family had not yet been notified of his death. But it's just like a sad, you know, such a sad story.
If he could yodel, maybe he would have been safe.
He was busy rehearsing a fight scene with another actor, and then he lost his footing and fell.
That's awful. You know, I always wonder about, like, the family. You know, you hear about, like, your dad is this stunt dude in a... Do we know his name?
I'm going to try and find his name because surely his family have been notified by now, but I don't know if they've released his name.
Yeah. God, that is just unbelievable. Oh, wow. Falling. Listen, there are two or three really disturbing stories in the news today. I mean, that one is one, but the one that really I cannot stop thinking about is this child who was thrown by its father from the roof of a shack. And he was caught. Luckily, this kid was caught by a policeman. And the crowd, this is what drives me crazy, is Mubs was telling me that the crowd were screaming, throw the kid.
Well, they were spurring him on.
Mm.
And how many times have we seen crowds just behave in a way that is unexplainable?
You've got to, if you see a mob, do the opposite. You always said to me, when you see a bunch of people running in a supermarket or a mall, you just got to get the hell out of there.
Don't even ask questions. Just go. Just go.
And the same rule should apply to any large gathering of people. Anything more than 20 people, I'm really nervous. I'm very, very nervous. And I don't know how I'm going to handle the Samizi roast because I've become quite agoraphobic. I'm not in the mood for a crowd. And there's going to be a whole sellout crowd, and we're going to be recording this thing. And I don't know if I want a crowd.
Okay, but they...
Shall I ask them if they can get rid of the crowd?
I don't think it works without a crowd.
I think everything works better without a crowd. Everything.
When is this happening again?
End of this month. In fact, I think it's the 26th we're recording. I've got to meet with the scripting people tomorrow because, you know, you kind of have to figure out who's coming on when. And So I'm the roastmaster general, but you know what happens then is that you end up being roasted as well, which I'm fine with because I've used up all the good material in me already. So that's not a worry. I'm just worried because there are some of these panelists who I really like. I can't reveal all of them because they haven't revealed them all publicly, but I know – they have said Skulk Poseidon, it's going to be on. He's funny. I like him. They said Ntsiki Mazwai is on. I don't like her, but we'll have to see.
Are you going to use Tumi's line on him about him being one pussclap away from Down syndrome? Because that line is still stuck with me as one of the most cutting things.
Oh, my
Mwale wasn't here that morning.
I wasn't
Dumi Murakia said she got into such trouble because she said that Skulk was one puss clap away from Down syndrome. And all the people who are like these activists for Down syndrome people were all over her.
I'm sure they were.
She's like, I was telling a joke, you idiots.
Is she involved in this?
No.
No.
But she did tell me that. She said, look, you got to know, everything's fair game on that show. I said, yeah, I know. And I was very much in two minds about whether I wanted to do it or not. They've been asking me to do where I would be roasted, and I've always said no. I don't believe I've done enough yet to be roasted. I mean, in the case of Somizi, this guy he's been on the stage since he was, 2 years old?
Yeah.
And Somizi's like an institution at the moment. He's everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere. And I really like the guy. I've got a lot of time for Somizi, so I almost consider it an honor to be part of the panel that's roasting him. In entertainment, if you can be roasted, you're a big deal. You've made it. And Somizi's made it. So I feel like he's the kind of guy I want to be, you know, roasting. And I want to be involved in that. But some of these people in this panel, I'm not so sure. Like in Tsiki Mazwai, I mean, I don't know if she even has a sense of humor. Like she takes everything very seriously, and she's just angry with everything. So I don't know how well she's going to go down. Skulk's great. Who else did they say is on? Have you guys heard any other names? I don't think I'm allowed to talk about the other names. But there's some nice people. There's some friends, some people who I like, people who I admire. They're going to be there as well.
Gareth, I know it's probably a copyright thing, but can we have an internal roast of Alan Ford?
That would be fun. Yeah, we could.
We could have a roast of Alan right here.
Yeah, why do you want to roast Alan Ford? You think he's made it?
Yeah. Well, he makes it into our lives every Thursday, whether we like it or not.
Oh, they announced Kurt Darren as one of the other people. Now, I don't know why he's there, but they're, you know, like Kurt Darren and Tsiki, I'm not so sure.
It's because they want Afrikaans viewers.
No, I don't think so.
Whatever Kurt does, he brings an audience.
Anyway, Trevor Gumby sent me a message over the weekend.
Okay.
With some ideas.
Oh, my word. Oh.
I will reveal. Here's a special CliffCentral.com exclusive.
Oh, right? My gosh.
The day after the roast, I will reveal what Trevor gave me that I couldn't use.
Okay.
Because it's too foul.
Oof.
Trevor Gumby sent me a page of ideas. Mm. He's been sitting at home going, rubbing his hands together. He said to me, listen. Brother, you're going to need some lines. Here's some lines. So Trevor's given me a whole supply. I'll probably only be able to use one or two of his because, you know, Trevor, wow. Just, holy shit, Trevor goes deep.
Yeah. Just percentage-wise, how much is abortion?
No, you must hear all the things about Tsiki Mazwai's pussy that he put in these. You cannot believe this.
That'll definitely be a go-to area on the night in question.
He's a foul man. Anyway, I'm going to get to that later on. There's important stuff we need to get to. Bad news, though, for the Rich Mulholland fans. Rich is being as unreliable as usual today, so we don't have Rich Mulholland on the show today.
He's probably snowboarding.
He's probably doing something that we're all jealous of. I'm sure he is. But I did want to talk to somebody because we've been discussing this over and over again. Someone emailed us. Remember we had that interview not so long ago with a guy who was complaining about how, as a father, his rights are often second or third. And we spoke about some other people we know where the dads and the moms have custody fights and, you know, our courts in this country decide one way or the other. But what I wanted to talk about with Dr. Leslie Ann Foster was what these situations can lead to. And she actually emailed us to say that she had some thoughts on this. And I want to welcome her to the show this morning. Hey, good morning, Leslie Ann. How are you?
Hi, good morning. Unfortunately, Leslie Ann is in Malaysia at the moment. You are speaking to Chris Lynn, I'm the shelter manager.
Oh, right. Hey, Chrislyn, what's happening?
Jesus. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. What's happening with you? And now, you didn't email me. Leslie Ann did, but you're going to respond like on her behalf, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, tell me, you're at the Masimanyane Women's Rights International, right?
Masimanyane Women's Rights International.
All right. Okay. Well,
yeah, so we are a non-profit international women's organization. We're based in East London.
All right. Tell me what your views are on this so that we can start a conversation about this stuff.
I think basically when I was listening to, you know, listening to your program and the segment specifically, there were a few things that came up that we felt, you know, was something open to discussion.
Sure.
And namely was, you know, the segment was very much just his story. So it wasn't a full, complete picture.
I think,
especially in terms of responding to protection orders.
Yeah, I think I made that fairly clear because we'd only heard one side of the story, and
yes.
and I didn't want an imbalanced approach to this because I obviously know that there's another side to the story which may not be the kind of story that he wants us to hear.
Yes, and that's why we really appreciate you also giving us the opportunity just to, you know, share what protection orders are and what the purpose of the protection orders are and why the process is the way it is.
All right. So, Chrislyn, you obviously know about this stuff and you're also completing your master's degree in social work. So you can tell me a little bit about how it actually does work. What does a woman who wants a protection order have to go through?
So basically what a protection order is, it's an order that is issued by the court at your request. So this is someone that is a victim of domestic violence, and you can approach the court. There are specific units at the courts that you go to. You speak to the clerks there, and you fill out an application form.
Okay.
Then this is the form. This form is called the Interim Protection Order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then this form goes through to the magistrate, where the magistrate looks at the form, and they, if they deem that they are satisfied with the evidence that is presented in the Interim Protection Order, then they grant the Interim Protection Order. But then you do have a final date. Now, this date is set to where the respondent, which this would be the perpetrator of the abuse, as well as the applicant,
mm-hmm.
Meet with the magistrate and actually discuss, you know, what is stated in the interim protection order.
So what kind of protection does this actually give someone? I mean, if I were applying for one, what would it mean for the person I'm applying for it against? Would they not be able to come anywhere near me? Would they not be able to make contact with me? Would they not be able to mention my name in social media? I mean, how far does this extend?
Well, it would also depend on what you put in the protection order. The general terms that we talk about that prevents the respondent, that would be the perpetrator of abuse, is from further committing any specified acts of domestic violence, from entering either a joint residence or a specific part of the residence, or if you are staying in separate households, the victim's residence. It can also prevent the respondent from entering the victim's place of employment, can also prevent the respondent from having contact with a child or children if it is in the best interest of the child.
Now, you obviously have practical experience of this kind of thing working with the institution that you're at. And I would imagine that there are probably a lot of women who see this as a last resort, really, because they just don't have any other options. And for many of them, they've probably had to put up with all kinds of threats or actual physical abuse up to that point. So it's a matter of, you know, really having a huge amount of courage to be able to go to the court and apply for one of these. Do these women have assistance from places like the place you work at?
Our organization specifically have offices at the courts. Within our area, we are based at the East London Court as well as the Mdansani Court, where we have experienced paralegal counselors there that actually assist the woman through the process.
Mm-hmm. And
as well as at the police stations.
Are a lot of these women must be extremely emotional, extremely nervous, extremely scared. They must feel very unsure and insecure and anxious about what could happen. How do you talk them into the fact that what they're going to do isn't going to put them in more danger? It's going to help protect them.
Well, look, it is not about talking into. It's merely giving the information and saying this is what you can do and the option is up to her. We do not prescribe.
Mm-hmm.
We merely state, look, there is this option, as well as what our clerks do is also inform them about the shelter service, where, you know, if the perpetrator is extremely violent and you are afraid that, you know, should you fill out the protection order and you know that the perpetrator is going to enact some sort of violence, then you also have the option of being referred to the shelter, where this is a place of safety. So you also, you assist the woman.
Mm. And I'm not talking about the fact that you guys would go in and try to persuade her into doing this, but if she's coming to you, it's likely that she's run out of options. And it's likely that this is the best possible case for her if she wants to be protected from physical or emotional harm.
Yes, because look, in South Africa specifically, if I can bring you to some of the stats, they say that domestic violence, which is also your intimate partner violence, is one of the most common form of violence experienced by South African women. So what does that actually mean, you know, in terms of the experiences of women behind closed doors in the safe home space? They also rate South Africa as one of the countries with the highest incident rates of domestic violence worldwide. So you can imagine we are dealing with an epic problem, you know, something with extreme proportions.
Yeah, and I can't imagine that, you know, anybody's happy about the fact that we have to go to such lengths to protect women, but I suppose, you know, in a world where you don't have many other things that you could run to and many other people that you could trust, for some women this is a saving grace. I'm curious also about the kind of access that a partner might have if there is an interim protection order, and that and the partner who you've got that interim protection order against, is that partner allowed to see the children? Are they allowed to apply to have custody of the children? Do they have to prove that they're not a danger anymore? I mean, how do they rescue the situation from their side if there has been a misunderstanding?
So specifically in the application for the interim protection order, so that is your first form that you complete, there is a section in the form where they ask, you know, is the child in any danger or exposed to, you know, violence. So you find most cases of domestic violence where there are children in the homes are exposed to domestic violence. So they already, you know, the magistrate will take into consideration. If the mother is experiencing domestic violence, the chances that the child is exposed to domestic violence is very high. So what is in the best interest of the child then? Whether the mother has stated on the form that actually the child is in any danger or isn't, the magistrate can draw on the information given and then decide what is in the best interest of the child.
Right, so that's always paramount.
So, say for instance, they have said, yes, you know, you do not have access for your child, so you want to know what is the follow-up for the father. Is that correct?
Right. So, I mean, is there a way that if they feel they've been misrepresented or that it's not entirely true that they're violent or any of that stuff, do they have to wait for a trial date? Is that the kind of, you know, is there going to be a hearing? Is there some kind of opportunity for the father to then say, look, you know, this is not the case. I'd like to see my kids.
There are two options that you know, the respondent can make, and this is either going to the family advocate's office. The family advocate's office is comprising of legal advocates as well as social workers, where they actually investigate what is in the best interest of the child. And then the second is when you actually appear for your final date to where the magistrate will actually, you know, grant the protection order. And there you will actually state your case to the magistrate.
Well, Chrislyn, thank you so much for speaking to us this morning. I'm sorry about the confusion around Leslie Ann at the beginning, but it's good to have this information at hand. And I appreciate you helping us out. If you're in East London, then obviously what you guys are doing at Masimanyane is very important. But I would imagine there are similar organizations across the country.
Yes, they are. And specifically to our organization, we are based in East London, but mm-hmm. we are actually what we say we are globally connected. We don't only work in East London. We work in various regions in South Africa. We also work internationally. We have partners all over the world. So not only do we bring a local perspective on domestic violence, but we also look at, from an international perspective where we get various information. We try to keep up with what the researchers are putting out there so that we can provide the best service to the women. But if you are needing any further information, you can refer to our website, which is www.masimanyane.org.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chrislyn Munyan.
No problem.
Very nice to speak to you this
morning. Thank you so much, Gareth.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Good work that they're doing there. That's useful information. And for a lot of people who are caught in this unenviable, deeply upsetting situation where you have to get a protection order against someone, and there are lots of, not just women, but men as well, but I'd say it's probably 90% of it is women, who need to protect themselves. You need to find some refuge. You need to find some way out of an ugly situation. This is the first step, and don't be afraid to make use of what the law provides in terms of this. So there we go. That's Chrislyn Munyan, and you can find out more from the Masimanyane Women's Rights International Group. There we are. All right. Anything you want to throw in here? Ben, Mabs, anything going on that you need to notify us of?
Well, we haven't spoke about Harvey Weinstein for quite some time.
Is he still... where is he?
Not for obvious reasons, because he's a creep and we don't like him. But Harvey Weinstein's lawyer had some interesting things to say recently about... he predicts there'll be no criminal charges at all about Harvey. So, kind of matter
who
of...
who predicts this?
His lawyer. Oh. So his lawyer said, look, Harvey didn't invent the casting couch. From day one, women have been sleeping with men of influence in the industry to get further in their careers. It's choices they have taken. Harvey, so what he's basically saying is he's justifying what Hollywood is, and Harvey's just a role in this whole thing, saying that it can't be rape if the woman decides to do this. So that's what he believes is his big defense here, is that Harvey is not actually the criminal.
He didn't invent
here.
It.
He didn't invent it. He was just high profile at doing it. Which kind of put this whole thing into perspective. Like we always said, this industry's dodgy as all hell. But the fact that, we had the same thing with Bill Cosby, is that will he ever be prosecuted? Is he ever going to become a criminal for what's happened? We've got people who have come forward and said things. Same with Harvey. People have come forward and said things. There's proof that stuff has gone on.
Mm-hmm.
But then within these realms that they live, are they then untouchable then?
Which is hugely problematic, because then... within those realms where they live, that's where these behaviors become normalized.
Yeah.
And then people then want to say, oh, we'll just deal with it because this is how things get done here.
And just as a matter of
fact. No, just deal with it.
Yeah, and just as a matter of fact, Harvey's not untouchable. In fact, the whole point was that you should touch him. That's what he wanted. No, he's a creep. I don't know if there'd be criminal charges, but the guy's career is finished. I mean, he's not going to be directing a movie anytime soon. Right?
I get that, and for some, that's justice enough. But obviously, people are saying, "Well, there must be criminal stuff on this."
Yeah.
But then his lawyer is basically saying, "Okay, sure, but on what grounds? Because it's not actually rape. What's going on here? It's just Hollywood."
I think everyone just wants to know what actually happened. The thing I'm interested in is which actresses did what Harvey wanted, because we're hearing from all the ones who said no, Harvey, no.
And then they got blocked.
Right.
Their careers were stunted.
Yeah. Well, they've got an axe to grind. I want to know who the actresses are who said, oh, all right, well, for an Oscar.
My mother did it. My grandmother did it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like how far back does it date? Because if the argument here is that, well, that's Hollywood for you, essentially then it's been happening since day one, since the Marilyn Monroe days.
And
do you know what I mean?
You know, long ago, actresses were pretty much considered, and actors were considered to be sex workers.
It's kind of,
acting was not a real job. It was something that people looked down on. And in social terms, being an actor was pretty much on the same parallel as being a hooker.
Exactly. What do you mean? Like which time? Which era?
We're talking 1600s, 1700s, 1800s.
Actors, prostitutes, same WhatsApp group. You would drink at the same place. Mm-hmm. You'd be seen in the same classes, essentially.
Right. No one would.
Oh, we've really classed it up now.
Yeah.
Look at
no one wanted to be seen with an actor or an actress. It would have ruined their reputation.
Mm. Or you would seek out the company of actors if you wanted a good time, as in you were like in the Roman days.
Yeah.
You'd be hang out with at brothels with actors. The same thing.
Yeah.
And if they're having a bad month on stage, then they would, you know, be turning a few tricks.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
But listen, the practice and the behavior still hugely problematic, especially when you hear about how it then extends into child rings.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes. Well, Ben's favorite topic. Oh, yeah. And obviously, the whole pedophilia child ring is so huge that no one's really ever wanted to admit to.
Within Hollywood, right?
Exactly, yeah. Mubs, because what you're saying, it becomes a norm. It's like you want to be a kid in Hollywood. Like, if you're a good-looking kid, whatever, you're maybe in a commercial. Like, you're in a cereal commercial or some shit like that. But if you want to make the step up, then you've got to take a step down as an aunt to your niece.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Ben.
Well, how did River Phoenix die?
Oh, my God. Hey? Really?
Why did he suddenly die?
Drug overdose?
What forces you to drugs? Old men.
And he was a pretty...
And those old men don't know their address to sex.
He was a pretty guy. Oh, like, geez. He was a good-looking kid.
Prime candidate. Pedophile ring. Mm. Casual number one.
We don't know that
for
sure.
Swept under the carpet, Ben, of the Viper Room.
Mm. We don't know that for sure, do we?
Oh, Gareth, you know, if you don't want to join the dots in life, well, that's up to you.
Okay. Corey Feldman is now saying that he'll probably be dead in a couple of months.
Corey Feldman's been saying that for 10 years. No one's killed him
but
yet.
But he's not attractive anymore, so that's why they don't care.
Yeah,
if Corey Feldman still had it going on in those terms, yeah.
Yeah, you see. I mean, look at how Corey Feldman turned out. And part of that is probably hugely because of the fact that he was raped or touched by a creepy man.
Interfered with. You probably find he wasn't raped that much. And that's what made him really bitter.
Jesus. All right, we can't carry on down this path. Ben's conspiracy theories will continue tomorrow.
Stop calling them conspiracy theories when people are getting affected.
I mean, we've got to call them something, Ben. They're not facts.
They're certainly not facts yet.
You can't disprove them.
Well, there's lots you can't disprove that still isn't true. All right, everybody, it's been a busy morning. Wow, lots to talk about, lots of things to think about, and we'd like to hear your feedback too. You can always get hold of us on our email, gareth@cliffcentral.com. You know, Mabale, Ben, cia@cliffcentral.com. You can also WhatsApp us anytime you like. We always get the messages, 0797482090. If you don't trust Mark Zuckerberg, use Telegram.
Oh.
Same number, right. 0797482090. We will catch you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Before we go, we've got an interview with David Higgs coming up. Remember, David Higgs, the guy who started Marble. He's one of our celebrity chefs. I think we had this interview with him before he became the guy on
My Kitchen Rules
mm-hmm. with Jay something.
Mm-hmm. It was. It was still in his formative stages of developing this new restaurant.
That's right.
Before his TV stardom.
And Marble still, I think, stardom. isn't Marble one of the best restaurants
it's
in Joburg?
It's very fancy.
People go there when they really want to impress someone.
Yeah, when you try to make a reservation, there's a 73% chance they'll laugh at you if you wouldn't actually go there with this year.
I've never gone there. Like, just going there and you get some bread laid out before you order, and even that tastes amazing.
Listen, I've been there twice. I went there once for a dinner
mm-hmm.
With some friends from the U.S., and then I went with Jay something for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
We had lunch there for, it felt like 2.5 hours. They just kept bringing food.
Isn't it just gorgeous?
They just keep bringing stuff.
And you just have to swipe for your meal while you have your eyes closed afterwards. You just don't need to see that.
You don't want to see the bill.
Yeah, no.
But it's good.
You go there with your blesser.
Yeah. That's right.
You go there with your Hollywood producer.
It's almost time. It's less than 3 weeks to go until Chance the Rapper performs live in South Africa. I saw a lot of news about this over the weekend. Catch him along with Shane Eagle, Nadia Nakai, and Frank Casino at the Castle Light Unlocks concert, Ticket Pro Dome in Joburg. It's all happening on the 30th of April. The next day is a public holiday, so there's no reason to miss out. Get your tickets now at CompuTicket for the Castle Light Unlocks concert. You don't want to miss this. Hashtag Castle Light Unlocks exclusive. Yeah, that's all happening. All right, here's the unnews. Though many were happy to see Bob Mugabe pushed out of power and never see him again, sympathy is starting to pour in for the man. Turns out he used to be physically abused by Grace, often and violently, so much so that he had to flee to the protection of the army. The army refused to take him in, though. They knew Grace would find him and turn her violent ways onto them. Colin Oros Maine has lost favor with the youth after admitting to meeting the Guptas on dodgy grounds. The youth know that political blessers like the Guptas don't just come around every day, and exposing them like that will seriously jeopardize their chances of being bought by state capturers in the future. And finally, the Commonwealth Games are now a thing of the past, with the athletes now returning home. Not all of them, though. Turns out quite a few athletes from Africa have gone missing. Many are saying that they're using their athlete visas to try and start a new life in Australia. But the reason is actually simpler than that. After Kagiso Rabada recently terrorized the Australian batsmen in South Africa, Cricket Australia are looking to develop their own fearsome African fast bowler and will welcome anyone who is 6'4 and full of muscle. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is CliffCentral.com.